I think, you know, in hearing the people speak up here today, it seems to be obvious to me to maybe a new paradigm needs to be created. That many times the metrics and the performance metrics that we're using generally come from an urban type environment and may or may not reflect the right way to measure things in a rural environment. Such things like economic development. Where is that in an urban type metric that may be then applied to a rural area? Or if we're trying to provide public transportation or Uber or other types of things in rural or frontier areas which are aging or which younger folks are moving to because they want to be there, maybe we don't have the right way to measure the success of that beyond how many passengers we're creating or the time in which the system is running. So one of the things that might be talked about even within the policy group is what might be that new paradigm? What might be that new metric that maybe we need to use to measure life in rural America, to make it safer, to make it more mobile, to make it more convenient? I don't know what that is. I'm not that smart. But I'm sure the group that we're going to get together will be that smart, and maybe they can come up with some ideas. I think one group that hasn't been identified that's here, and I think is a very part of economic development in rural America, are those organizations involved in tourism or federal lands? Could you raise your hands if you're here in either one of those groups? Thank you. And thanks for coming to this, and I hope that you can provide it'll provide value to your time.
Cindy mentioned in her remarks that a lot of rural counties are losing population, and you all heard repeated the stats that there's a higher rate of fatalities in rural areas, and the much greater proportion, 54%, something like that, fatalities in rural areas, but only 19% of the population. So money usually follows where legislators are from. Legislators are elected based on where the people are, and the people aren't in rural America, but the fatalities are. So how do you go to the legislature, or go to Congress, or go to whoever's passing out money, and convince them to change the relationship between money and fatalities, rather than focus on the incidence and the high incidence and rates of fatalities in rural areas, rather than where the most people live?
So this was true in Colorado, or this is true in Colorado, this was true in Delaware, which you would not think of an urban-rural divide, but there is the C&D Canal in Delaware represents northern Delaware, which is sort of like Philly, and lower Delaware, which is below the canal, which is very rural. And Kentucky, if you aren't Louisville or Lexington, it's pretty rural for the 120 counties there. And whether it was the Ohio River Bridges Project, which the rest of Kentucky hated because they viewed it as all the money going into Louisville, the I-70 Central Project where we're going to replace the viaduct, and I'm going to use your idea if we can, bridge is in pretty bad shape, where the rest of Colorado feels like all the bridge money is going into one project here in Colorado, it is tough. I would say that in Colorado our solution is that we have a transportation commission that probably to the detriment, the perception in Colorado is that all the money is going to Denver Metro and the Front Range. And if you actually look at the money, I would say that Denver Metro is actually not getting as much money per capita as it could if all the political representation was here, because we have a transportation commission that more broadly represents the state and helps take a 30,000-foot look at it, as opposed to the more parochial ways of getting it done. I've seen it done badly in states where I may not represent a lot of people, but I've been in office a long time, and I've just worked up a store of capital and knowledge of where bodies are, and I just somehow managed to get my projects put on the list. That's not how we do it in Colorado, but I've seen that done. And the last safeguard I would say that's in place is the U.S. Senate. So even though the representation by population is reflected in the House, every state has two senators, which is why you generally tend to see, and you know this, you know, some of the more populist or population-centered issues coming out of the House generally with a bill like that, and then the more rural pieces being represented when it gets over to the Senate, and then that getting worked out in conference. So I don't know that there's a perfect solution, but we seem to be trudging along with it.
If you wanted to. The only thing I would add to that is that you have to have partnerships. It's like what we're doing here. We're having partnerships, and we're having roundtable discussions, and that's where NACO, the National Associations of Counties, comes in. We try to get key people in every state to be involved. So, for example, Senator Inhofe is a key person for transportation in the Senate, so from Oklahoma. So I have a personal relationship with him. I can call him and talk to him. In the brochure that you had displayed earlier, I was displayed in, and that was with Frank Lucas. So when he comes back to Oklahoma, I meet with him. I take him out on my roads and my bridges. And that's what each one of us in a rural area, we need to be having that relationship with our congressmen and our senators so that we can have that dialogue to let them know how important it is for rural counties.
I was just wanting to hear the percentage of the bridges in the counties that you said that have issues. The county, you said 45% of the counties own the roads.
We own 45% of the bridges in across. There's 450,000 total bridges that the counties own, and about half of them are deficient.
Dr. Sleet, I have a question for you regarding DWI enforcement. You said that, what was the statistic regarding checkpoints?
I think that was between 8 and 20%.
8 and 20%. And my question to you is, has that increased or decreased since the evolution of the cellular phone and the applications that are put on cell phones to where people get on immediately and say there's a checkpoint here? Have you seen a reduction in DWI arrests that way, or do you think that possibly focusing that funding on, as opposed to doing checkpoints, doing more focused enforcement, having on control and looking for behaviors that you're probably cause, as opposed to stopping people as they're going, they're not doing anything wrong and they're being stopped, and you're slowing them up. So the question is, what do you think is the solution?
On the first point, no, we haven't done that work to look at the influence of cell phones. The data I was reporting were from 2001, before cellular phone use was really very popular. So I think that's probably a question, a research question that NHTSA or FHWA would want to pursue, probably are pursuing. The second part of your question, I wasn't quite sure what you were asking.
If you're stopping, as opposed to doing checkpoints, you use that funding to have more officers on the road during more peak times.
Part of the results that we found was also that high visibility enforcement was very effective.
Okay.
Rapid patrols, saturation patrols also worked very well. And those are things that the states are still using as part of the enforcement strategies, so they do work. Yeah, sure. There's a whole movement afoot on active living. There's even a Robert Wood Johnson now 7-year funded program on active living research. They have a conference every year. I'm convinced that it does make a difference. I'm a little worried about if you get people out of cars and onto bikes and to walking, without changing the rest of the transportation infrastructure in cars, you're actually going to increase injuries. So that's our concern. We would love to see more research on that. It will work if you get like maybe 80% of the population on bikes and walking, but if you get 10%, actually your injuries could increase. Any person who's in that crash who dies gets into the data.
And do you also track bicyclist pedestrian crashes or fatalities when there's not a motor vehicle involved?
Yes.
But it wouldn't be necessarily in those numbers?
The motor vehicle numbers that I was reporting were FARS numbers, which are any crashes and injuries and deaths on public roads.
Okay.
So that's the limiting issue. Some of these injuries that would occur off the public road are not in those data.
Question for David. How much of the fatalities are due to actually making roads safer versus we have better doctors, better EMTs, better medicine, and not as many people are dying?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's true to some extent. I don't have the exact numbers that would tell us which is which, but I think it's absolutely true. Better medical care, better EMS services, better rehabilitation keeps people alive longer. But I haven't seen any distinct breakout of what percentage is due to that versus changing the roads or changing the drivers. It's a great question.
But I would just add on that if you are involved in a crash in a rural area, the odds of getting to a level 1 or level 2 trauma center are much lower. You're probably going to end up in a level 3 trauma center, and there's a direct correlation between not just the quality, but the experience of trauma centers with these crashes and your survivability of the crash.
I've always thought when you're looking at rural transportation, rural safety, there is no silver bullet that's going to solve all the problems. So we have to work together. We have to look at things differently. We have to try different approaches, because many of the things for safety that you can do in an urban area aren't necessarily just transferable to rural areas, and it takes a combination of things to actually solve the problem.